So here we are at a moment where our democracy is being mirrored by these experiments. It's a chance for us to grow in wisdom, you know, or get more intransigent, I guess. There's a moment when the United States is losing its economic hegemony in the world to Japan and Germany and stuff like that. We're just going to become another one of the team. That can be an incredibly graceful moment, or it can be, we're going to be first if it kills us, which it will. Because when you push against what is, sooner or later it gets you. Had you noticed? I mean, you may need a long time span, but there are forces, and if you, part of what an awakening person does is they listen, they quiet their minds, they stop identifying with their thoughts so much so they can hear the universe, they start to tune to the intuitive wisdom, and then you feel these forces and these movements. You know, I can feel what happened in the 60s, in the shifts in our understanding of reality, then slowly kind of sliding into the culture in all these subtle ways through the rock movement and so on. And even the reactivity of President Reagan's 8-year reign, for example, when compassion went out of style, and these qualities that you know to be true went underground and you become like a closet compassioner. And then that's all part of these huge rhythms. They're like pendulum swings. And now, I mean, my statement now is if you like the 60s, you are going to love the 90s. Okay. Because just what you loved about the 60s, the innocent possibility, the opening because it's all up for grabs, because there's very accelerated change in the universe. And that's an interesting moment when things are changing politically, economically, ecologically, social structures. What's happened to the family, for example? We've been so busy being independent that we all got into wonderful alienation syndromes. Then we go and we rent family surrogates. Well, I'll join a group of people that are all children of people who ate too much. See, in my original family, I was the only one, but now I can have any world I want. I will find everybody with the same pathology, and so we can all hang out together and reassure each other that we are recovering. I am on very thin ice at this moment in the conversation, I want you to know. In Tampa, some people walked out at this point. Because when you have a religion, you have a religion. I mean, you... I'm an elder in the 12-step program. And I want to know, are you New Age or aren't you? I think it's great to join with a group of people that share your pathology. Because that takes you through a certain place where you thought you were alone and it was obsessing you and it was a real drag. And now you find other people and they share each other, you give testimonials, and then everybody feels better. At that point, there is a problem. Once it's worked, once it's done that thing, then there's a problem because you've formed all these emotional alliances with this family surrogate and you don't want to graduate. And yet your only reason for membership is your pathology. What are you going to do then? Well, I'm busy recovering. You know, when did you drink last? 22 years ago. Well, I'm a recovering alcoholic. Well, that somehow to me, that seems like clinging to your personal history a little excessively. I mean, if you're a, I mean, people that are diabetics don't go around, I'm a diabetic, you know? I mean, you don't have to be a diabetic. You take insulin. But you don't have to define, I'm, you know. But darling, we're in bed. It doesn't matter. I'm a diabetic, you know? It's bizarre. We're all so many things. Why pick that one? Like, you know, when I was a child, when I'd swear in the presence of my mother, she'd say, "You foul-mouthed little boy, wait till your father gets home." And then my father would come home, you know, tired and hungry, you know, in from the hunt, you know. And as Robert Bly points out, in the Industrial Revolution, that's all you ever see of the male figure, is this tired, hungry thing that comes home from the hunt, because it goes to work every day. And so my father would come home and she'd say, "Do you know what he said?" And coming out of her mouth, the whole thing sounded really heinous, you know. And he'd say, "Get to your room." And then he'd come into my room and he was hungry and tired and, "You little idiot, using that language to your mother," and, you know. And now and then he'd give me a clout on the behind. Well, now, I am an abused child by definition now. So somebody says, "But you weren't really abused." Well, what's really? I mean, he hit me on the behind. Now, I know the distinction between child sexual molestation and really vicious behavior for parents, and my father certainly didn't do any of those. But the point I make is that at any point I could have joined a group based on that and defined myself that way. But I didn't. Instead, I joined, like, the SAVA Foundation in 79. It was a group of people who came together intentionally to cultivate the quality in their being of compassion. I said, if I'm going to join a club, see, a club could be a religion, could be a philosophical belief system, it could be a family, it could be, but if you're going to do an intentional club, you pick people that, it seems to me, I want to pick people that will help me become free and cultivate those qualities that are latent, where my balance is out of whack, where I'm too much in my head and not enough in the that kind of heart space, that intuitive heart space. So I will join with other people who want to do the same thing. And it's a very interesting experiment, and it's hard. It's a very hard experiment. And at some point, it will self-destruct too, because all institutions, it's tricky to keep an institution living truth. Because the reason you create it, then you change, and then the reason starts to become a real thing. Unless it's a continuously living truth for you. So we've done this terrible thing to our social ecology because we've cut ourselves off because our myths were about independence. And the woman in the St. John the Divine course who was frightened of losing her boundaries really needn't be if she were hearing clearly that the art isn't to overcome your separateness. It is to find the balance between the separateness and the unitiveness, between the head and the heart. To find the balance so you are both. Not to destroy the separateness. And your separateness has its unique predicament. I'll give you an example. After Dad died, I was free to dissolve the household that we had had to protect him in Boston. And then I was free to move. And the group in SAVA said, well, let's start over the years to move closer together so we can work more deeply from and find a deeper truth from which to do service. since it turns out it's easy to do good, it's hard to do good well, by the way. So I moved to California, and because that was what the vote came down to move to. And one of the board members had bought a home that had a carriage house on it, and he said, would I like to live in the carriage house, and we'd all be close? And I said, yeah, so I'll rent the carriage house from you. So I went out in the fall to look at the carriage house, and it was a beautiful carriage house with deer and the fields, and it was very beautiful, really lovely. But it was missing two things. It was missing a fireplace. Well, it had a few things. I mean, some of the windows leaked, and so I had those fixed. And then I wanted a fireplace. And it was missing a hot tub. Now, I don't know how it is in Denver, but in Marin, hot tubs are like toilets. I mean, it's, see, we have very severe drought conditions in Marin, so we have to reuse our bath water. So hot tubs are allow you to do that. So I found this wholesale hot tub for $3,200. It was an eight-sided tub. My friends immediately labeled the eightfold bath of the of the upper middle way. So now here's my predicament. See, I'm teaching the course on homelessness in New York while my construction man is putting in the hot tub out in California. The homeless course has homeless people in it, along with all these people doing service, and I'm out there in the streets, you know, protesting unfair treatment of homeless people, and I'm helping out with a sleeping bag here or something there. And all the time I'm putting in this $3,200 hot tub. Now, the question I raised for myself is, do I tell them? Can I afford not to? Because if I don't tell them, and I'm teaching, and I'm sharing my being, since Gandhi said, my life is my message, that's part of the message. When you get me, you get a $3,200 hot tub. So I told them. I said, hey, by the way, they were very good. The way they handled it, well, the way they hid, was they said, sounds therapeutic. And I let them have it. I mean, it's okay. It's a more interesting issue than that, however. It's an issue of where the boundaries are set from. Are the boundaries set by the mind out of fear of being overwhelmed by the heart? Or if you listen quietly, do you hear what your unique part is to play? And within that, you play it. And then there are boundaries within that. And you can say, part of it is learning how to say no to somebody's thing or somebody without closing your heart. And you can only do that if the no is in harmony with the way of things. In other words, if it's coming out of an open heart. As Kabir said, do what you do with another human being, but never put them out of your heart.